Welcome to the Voice of Christian Liberty. I am Pastor Calvin Lindstrom. It's good to be with you again. Today I am joined in the studio by Mike McHugh again, and we are discussing the book George B. McClellan, The Disposable Patriot, a book that Mike authored in 1998. General McClellan is a fascinating character, an honorable man, and we're going to give attention to his life and specifically then to this book entitled The Disposable Patriot. Mike, let's begin with simply, why did you write this biography about George McClellan in 1998?
Well, Calvin, the background leading up to this project was that in the mid-90s, I had undertaken some editorial work on a series of Civil War biographies covering the lives of men such as Stonewall Jackson, Robert E. Lee, and Jeb Stuart, written by a lady by the name of Mary Williamson. And those were subsequently published by Christian Liberty Press and received very favorably. And after a period of time, though, I had a contact from a homeschool family who was aware of these biographies, and she asked the question, really more in the form of a challenge, well, you know, you've published a number of excellent things and done some editorial work on Southern leaders in the war between the states, but isn't there anyone in the North that was a good and godly man that was at least worthy of some attention? And so I took that challenge to heart, Calvin, and I went ahead and did some research, and quite honestly, it was a little bit of an uphill battle. Many of the Northern generals and leaders, although perhaps very capable on the field of battle in certain instances, were not exactly a paragon of virtue and uprightness. So I was looking for someone in the North who was not only an able military person, but someone who really exemplified the Christian values that we believe in. And lo and behold, I came across to this George B. McClellan. And at first, I must admit, even after I found him, I nearly lost him because I began to read some of the common writings and criticisms of McClellan. And that very nearly discouraged me from continuing on with my project. But to make a long story short, I'm very glad that I did persevere. I eventually came across an excellent book written by Stephen Sears, a notable historian and writer, highly respected in the field of Civil War authorship. And he wrote in the late 80s an excellent biography on McClellan's life called The Young Napoleon. And that book was very well documented and well received. However, after I read that book, I still felt as though a lot of the Christian aspects of McClellan's life were either ignored or set aside or were simply not properly handled. And so that motivated me even more to pick up the pen and move into this project.
Wikipedia is one of the most known sites on the internet, and it is a reservoir of facts and pictures, all sorts of things. And you could research General McClellan on Wikipedia, and you could come up with a good overview of his life. But as you mentioned, it is the Christian aspect, which I believe is entirely neglected. I could be wrong. I just searched the article quickly. And so an author, a fine author, sometimes can miss significant aspects of a person's life, especially if it's an unbeliever who is trying to approach the life and understanding of someone who trusted in Jesus Christ and just not understand that.
No doubt. I was fascinated by the collection of the original papers and letters that McClellan wrote to his wife both during and after the war. And what was fascinating was to read through these letters, and many of which are published in my book, and just to see the deep theological and Christian principles that exuded from this man, and how those principles made his relationship with his wife so rich and meaningful. It was just touching, literally touching in my heart to read over these things. And then, like I say, to see how someone who wasn't reading those letters from a Christian perspective could, as you say, could easily miss the real import of what was being said.
give listeners, Mike, a brief overview of the life and times of General McClellan.
General McClellan was born in Philadelphia, Calvin, in 1826. Upper middle class family. His dad was a doctor and was a leader in his field. He was a longtime friend of Daniel Webster and other notables among the gentry. And so George McClellan had a very happy and a pleasant childhood, was privately tutored for a number of years, and their family attended a conservative Presbyterian church there in the Philadelphia area for many years. And so McClellan grew up at that stage, and as a young man of only about 15 years old, he was originally leaning towards a law career, but ultimately decided upon a military one. And at that point then, with his father's assistance and some members of Congress pitching in, he was able to get an appointment to West Point. So at the tender age of being in his late teens, McClellan heads off to West Point, where he distinguishes himself. He ultimately finishes second in his class in West Point, and along the way writes a number of military journals, which were eventually published in both English and French. And he invents his own saddle, which eventually became known as the McClellan saddle, since he was very interested in the cavalry and so forth, and cavalry tactics. And so a fascinating man, kind of a Renaissance man, a man who was gifted in many, many ways. And so after his appointment to West Point was over and he had graduated, he then ultimately got involved with the war in Mexico in 1846 through 1848. Later on, of course, after that short war, he ends up getting involved actually in the railroad business for a number of years.
Lived in Chicago for a time, correct?
That's right. Lived in Chicago for a time and ended up being an administrator and executive in one of the large railroad firms there based out of Chicago. And so he did that for a number of years, eventually married to a good Christian woman. And then, of course, primarily the study of McClellan's life really comes to its zenith during the those years leading up to and including the war between the states.
Tell us about a few of the most outstanding accomplishments of General McClellan, both as a soldier and as a man.
Well, I think first and foremost, other than his distinguishing himself as a scholar and his years at West Point and his service in the Mexican War is well documented. He was given citations for bravery and distinguished himself in battle under heavy fire a number of times. He rode with the likes of Grant, Ulysses S. Grant, and for that matter, he fought alongside men like Robert E. Lee, as well as Stonewall Jackson and others who were also involved in the Mexican War. So, small world. But anyway, he did a superlative job as a soldier in Mexico and was promoted during that conflict. After the war, of course, the next chapter is during the Civil War. Early on, McClellan was appointed by Lincoln to be the supreme commander of all the forces in the North. And he was a very, very young man at this time.
In his 30s, correct?
Yes, right, early 30s at that. And so he was immediately distinguished himself as an able administrator and a one who was a phenomenal organizer. Ultimately, it was under his leadership that became known as the Grand Army of the Potomac was formed, an army which eventually became 100,000 strong. At that time, very probably the largest army on the face of the earth. And this was largely due to the administrative leadership and the tireless efforts of one George McClellan. Even McClellan's critics have to acknowledge his exemplary skill as a as an organizer and as an administrator. He was indeed exemplary in those regards. As far as some of his largest battles during the Civil War, he distinguished himself in one of the bloodiest battles in the Civil War, the Battle of Sharpsburg or Antietam,
right,
where over 50,000 men fell over a 48-hour period. It just boggles the mind. And, of course, he also had a a very large and interesting campaign along the peninsula there prior to the Battle of Antietam, in which McClellan took his Grand Army down through Yorktown area and was seeking to besiege Richmond and to take over the Confederate capital, and he came awfully close to doing so. They could literally hear the church bells ringing in the distance in Richmond. But the long and short of it is, a little guy that was not all that well known at that time by the name of Robert E. Lee took over after General Johnston in the Confederate forces was severely wounded, and General Lee rallied the Confederate forces and ended up ultimately pushing back and defeating McClellan's army and forcing them to pull back away from Richmond. So these are just some of the highlights, Calvin. Finally, I would say that after the war, it should not be dismissed of the fact that he was eventually, a number of years after the war, given the ability to serve as the governor of New Jersey, which he did with this distinction, I might add.
And as we were talking about even before the broadcast, he runs for president against Abraham Lincoln, the Democratic nominee, 1864, I believe.
Correct? That's right, 1864, late in the year. And he makes a run of it. It was actually a relatively close race at that time. And even though there was strong sentiment in many parts of the country at that point to stay the course, you know, basically the thinking was, Calvin, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, we are where we are. Let's not change horses until we finished this ugly war and put it behind us. Notwithstanding, McClellan, on a shoestring budget, was able to give Lincoln quite a run for his money during that 1864 election.
Interesting. You've entitled your book "The Disposable Patriot." What is behind that? I would say an interesting title. Probably yeah. Most who would read that wouldn't necessarily get what you are trying to convey. Explain that.
Well, I chose that because I really felt as though history has not done him justice. In a word, that McClellan has really been the scapegoat in terms of all that went wrong, and there was a lot that went wrong from the North's perspective during the first 2 years of the war. And most of that ended up being laid at the foot of one George McClellan, who not only did not prosecute the war in the aggressive, reckless way that later generals would sometimes do, but also he was not politically correct. George McClellan was a conservative man. He was not one of the radical Washingtonians. And so he simply did not fit. And so when he was no longer useful to their purposes, after he had built up this grand army and done much for his country, as long as they felt as though he was no longer useful, they simply not only tossed him out and disposed of him, but in the process felt as though they needed to trash his reputation. And sadly enough, they've done a fairly good job of doing that. My little book here, Calvin, is my little small effort to try to redeem a godly, patriotic man who did what he felt was his duty as he understood it in terms of what God had called him to do and to serve his country. Sadly enough, many of his accomplishments, at least, have been largely either ignored or disparaged.
And I think it's a good title because, wouldn't you say, McClellan understood that about his own life, correct? That he was, I mean, many people might think, oh, I haven't gotten a fair shake, but he could better understand the dynamics and realize that, I think he made the comment that it would be history that later would judge him more properly, and I think that does come out in your book also.
Yes, and I am not unhappy to share with the audience today that a number of the more recent books, by recent I mean within the last 10, 15, 20 years, have been, and articles that come out in scholarly journals, have been considerably more sympathetic and understanding to the reputation of George McClellan. So things are a bit brighter of late. Now that obviously the intense passions and agendas, political and otherwise, of you know that were so hot and so fervent many years ago, obviously those are long gone now, and so we're able to take a more dispassionate, just the facts kind of look at a lot of these different Civil War leaders like McClellan and to be able to draw, I think, a little bit more accurate conclusions.
Much has been written about the strained relationship McClellan had with President Abraham Lincoln, other cabinet members of Lincoln's. What's your perspective on these issues?
Well, McClellan knew Lincoln, and Lincoln knew McClellan even before the war. And in fact, McClellan, when he was a railroad man, helped to shuttle around the man who was running against Lincoln at that stage. And of course, so politically, they were not on the same page. And then, of course, once the war begins, initially, of course, the relationship between Lincoln and McClellan was quite good, quite strong. Lincoln had tremendous confidence in McClellan, gave him a lot of power and responsibility and leeway, and McClellan took full advantage of that. And yet there came a point where after McClellan, as I say, had built up this grand army, now all of a sudden more and more pressure was being put upon Lincoln by the radicals to not only get the war going, but to get the war going against not just the Southern military machine, but against Southern society and Southern culture. They wanted a complete eradication of the Old South, and including, I might add, the political and theological underpinnings of that so-called Bible Belt region. Mm-hmm. And so there was much at stake, and Lincoln was beholden to many. Obviously, there were great financial forces at work here. The North was mounting huge debts in an effort to try to support this grand army of theirs. And it was a phenomenal undertaking. And here is Lincoln trying to juggle all these forces and to keep everybody happy. And obviously, that was mission impossible. And so eventually, the point came where Lincoln could no longer afford to be Mr. Nice Guy. And so all of a sudden, he began to put more and more pressure on McClellan. Their relationship degenerated to the place where Lincoln would call a meeting between the two men, and McClellan wouldn't show up. Or in one case, which was very commonly quoted and referred to as the case where Lincoln came out of frustration over to McClellan's house unannounced, and McClellan happened to be out at a wedding. Lincoln waited around. McClellan came back from the wedding, tired and purportedly not feeling particularly well. He went right upstairs and went to bed, and there Mr. Lincoln and two of his aides sat in his drawing room. Until eventually one of McClellan's aides came down and said to the president, "Well, Mr. President, I hate to tell you this, but, Mr., you're not able to meet today with George McClellan." So at any rate, that snub was well publicized, as I say, and kind of characterized the degenerating relationship between McClellan and the president, which, as I say, was really, really unfortunate in many respects. Because in earlier years, McClellan at least had a somewhat amiable relationship with Lincoln.
How would you compare McClellan with Robert E. Lee, other notable generals?
Well, I think that, as Lee himself put it, when he was asked years after the war, who the ablest Northern general was, Lee's response was McClellan, by all odds, quote unquote. General Grant also had equally favorable things to say in reflecting upon George McClellan. And yet, where McClellan sits in terms of the criticism that I think does bear some real credibility in McClellan is the fact that when it came to his work as a field commander, Calvin, because perhaps he was so animated by his Christian virtues and principles, he just lacked that killer instinct. He lacked that go-for-the-throat kind of aggressiveness, which is so vital to a successful military commander. In a word, McClellan, with his huge army and lots of money and time behind him, McClellan could literally afford to be more laid back and cautious. And, of course, sometimes just flat too cautious. Robert E. Lee and men like him, they didn't have the luxury. No. They had to go for broke. They had to take phenomenal risks. McClellan was not willing to unnecessarily risk human life just so he could get another star on his shoulder. And that was the kind of man McClellan was. And it was part of what made him the man that he was, and what we can admire about McClellan. But it's also something then that does truly leave him open to genuine criticism in terms of the fact that he was not the greatest, most successful field commander and combat commander during the Civil War. There were many worse than him, to be sure, but he was not of the caliber of Robert E. Lee. But then again, as I point out in my book, few men were.
Right. I think he's only head of the Union armies for maybe 5 months. Is that correct?
It was a bit more than that.
Okay.
A bit more than that.
Your book often refers to his close relationship with his wife. Mm-hmm. How was his wife very influential in his life?
Well, she was the one that really, after the Mexican War, McClellan's faith was probably at the lowest ebb that it had been during his young life. And when he got to know his wife, when he was courting her, she was really just calling him back to the faith of his fathers. She was really influential in bringing him back to the church and to a vibrant Christian life. And their relationship really reflected a tenderness, which is really reflects well upon the faith, and really the Lord mightily used her to that end. Like many men that go away to war, it's extremely challenging, not only on husband-wife relationships, but just upon when men get away from civilized society, as it were. They often let their guard down. Even Christian men begin to pick up bad habits once again and begin to drift in some cases. And this, to a degree, happened with McClellan. And so his wife was, as I say, very instrumental in bringing him back to a solid walk with the Lord Jesus Christ. And then, of course, with many of the times when McClellan was discouraged with, as he sometimes called it, the enemy in his rear, of all the scheming and the conniving politicians in Washington, D.C., trying to nip at his heels, trying to stab him in the back, he at times was so discouraged. He was just absolutely distracted. And that's where his wife would come in, as wives so often do, and just be able to come alongside her husband and say, just, honey, look at the big picture. Calm down. You're not working for these people. You're working for the Lord. Mm-hmm. And so it was that kind of somewhat quiet but nevertheless powerful influence of a wife upon a husband, which really, at times at least, kept McClellan from going off the deep end.
Very interesting. A good testimony to the importance of a godly woman.
Amen.
What would you say is the reading level of this biography? Who would be a reader? What reader would be interested in this subject material?
Well, Calvin, I tried to make it a popular read. I tried not to use too many highfalutin words and the like. And yet, I would say that probably it's most enjoyable by a teenage and adult audiences. I would think that audiences below, let's say, age 13, 14, it might be a bit of a stretch. So I would say teenage up through adult audiences would bode well. And I do believe that the work is scholarly enough to where if somebody just enjoys, as an adult, picking up a book because they really enjoy the Civil War and studying about Civil War life and times of different leaders, it would be something that would be by no means, I think, beneath someone of that caliber. So at any rate, I think would be, most of my recommendations. With the homeschool families I've rubbed shoulders with over the years, most of them would use this, for example, as a book report book, or maybe as a history supplement for American history sometime during the high school years.
I think reading biography is a great way to learn history. It gives a perspective and then an interest to find out more. When it's a story, you can track it. You can put dates with events more easily, I believe, and just even his class of 1846.
Yes.
Just you remember dates like that helps you put some of the larger history together.
No doubt about it. I mean, a lot of people talk about studying history from a chronological perspective. And you, as you say, Calvin, it's so beautiful because you can see who were all the contemporaries of George McClellan. And so these names all of a sudden start taking on a lot more relevance once you understand a little bit more about the history of these men.
Even the philosophy of the war, the change that the war takes in terms of what are the stated goals, I think comes out very well in this book. If you're interested in learning more about George McClellan, I would recommend very highly The Disposable Patriot, written by Michael McHugh. You can find this work at shopchristianliberty.com, shopchristianliberty.com. You can reach us also by phone, 800-348-0899. And the book is, I think, reasonably priced, $9 or $10, somewhere in that ballpark.
Right.
So I would highly recommend that. You can check out the other biographies we also have on Stonewall Jackson, Robert E. Lee, Jeb Stuart. We have some good works that will help you and your family learn more about this important period in our nation's history. May God bless.